KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you on a beautiful Easter Sunday. Happy Easter. Happy Passover. It is a week of new beginnings. New beginnings during a time of complete destruction. Before I get into my theory about how we need destruction in order to have some growth in everything in life, I want to thank Chef Luca over at Sosta Restaurant in Hermosa Beach. I decided I have not eaten in a restaurant in about 6 weeks, and I saw an email from him saying he was cooking Easter dinner, and I asked him, could it be brunch for me because I got to work? And I ordered from his restaurant a 4-course amazing Easter brunch, and I just had it with my two daughters. I set it up as if there was an Easter bunny, but as if the Easter bunny, of course, is immune to the virus. But as if my kids were young is what I did. And I decorated a table. We had a lovely Easter brunch and poured even a little bit of bubbly. Yes. If you hear the little bit of slur in my voice, that's just the bubbly. But I mixed it with coffee afterwards. That's like the perfect thing, right? To raise our spirits. I know that we are in a time of great turmoil, a time that I would call a destruction phase of our lives. And I want to talk about this. You know, I have this theory that all living things, plant material, human stages of life, go in three specific phases. That is, a phase of creation, followed by a phase of homeostasis, followed by a phase of destruction, and then again, back to creation. But you can't have new growth and new creation. I mean, think about how a seed sprouts into a plant that eventually flowers. You know, I was trying to explain to my friend recently, because we were touring a community garden, how the tomatoes come when the stalk is dying. When the tomato plant is brown and dying, the last remaining thing is this juicy, delicious tomato before complete destruction. And then they go to seed and it starts over again. I've always said these same phases work for our relationships too. Pay attention to your relationships. If you are in a long-term monogamous relationship, you will probably notice these phases and stages, and hopefully the destruction phase wasn't enough to break you up. The destruction phase was a time for you to reevaluate and recontract your relationship. However, you know, we're living such long lives that many people will have lots and lots of serial monogamy that will go through these stages. So here we are in a stage of destruction. It is a surprise to have this change upon us because we didn't pick it. But are you spending some time reevaluating your life, your values, your priorities? I have this conversation with friends and they say, oh, you know, this happened in the Great Recession. We all said we learned how to live with less, so we're going to live with less forever. And here we are, you know, however many years later, 6, 7 years later, back into a booming economy, too much consumption, too much busyness. But I don't know. I think this one is different. This forced time for those of you who are with family members, this forced time together, doing things. I keep saying to my kids, this is what it was like in the 1970s growing up, where you put together jigsaw puzzles and read books and played games with the family on long, cold winter evenings. We only had two channels back then, TFC, as I call it. You can translate that. I can't swear on the radio here. And so as a result, we were forced to do things together. And I think, I mean, I hope, certainly with my teen and young adult children here, that they are seeing the value in this and that they will do some of this with their own kids and that we will come back together and do these kinds of things more often. Because despite, I mean, if we can keep our eyes off the news except as needed, right? If there are new protocols directed by our government, we obviously want to keep a count of the deaths and pray for the families of those who are losing people. And on that note, I want to remind everybody that part of our negative feelings that happen after we consume the news is we get imbibed with a little bit of survivor's guilt, right? We start to feel like, oh no, I feel so bad because I'm healthy, because my stomach is full. I see the people, especially the hardworking poor who have fallen into poverty and are standing in food lines during this time. I'm forever grateful to my colleagues and friends at the St. Joseph Center because they are still feeding the homeless around Los Angeles. And if you are going to donate money, just saying the St. Joseph Center would be a good place. But let's talk a little bit about the kinds of change that come into our lives quite regularly. There's the kind of change that we plan. And I call that the, I can't wait to do it. That's the one where you're starting a new job, where you're graduating from college, where you're counting the days to your wedding. Well, all those plans have been torn away. The I can't wait to do it has become when will it ever happen? Or is it gone forever? Then there is change that is, ugh, I know I have to do it. And that's when you can't avoid something that you know you've had to do for a long time. It might be your doctor telling you it's time to lose weight. It might be you realizing it's time to get rid of a toxic relationship. That's a different kind of change. But we're into another kind of change right now. We are into the please don't make me do this and, oh, where do I start? You know, this is when the bottom has dropped out unexpectedly. This is when we're scrambling. We are now facing a world that has changed overnight. And I want to say this as advice. If you spend your time clinging to that door that is closed, you will not be thinking about and seeing the doors that are open, right? So a cool thing about this kind of change, where the bottom has dropped out by disaster, God forbid, illness or death in your family, it stirs up all kinds of surprising feelings. Relief that you're not affected, guilt that you're not affected, sadness for others, anger that you can't go to work, and then we bounce back again, right? So I want to say this, keep yourself open to change. Stop and watch. There are doors opening. Don't be totally proactive. Don't make big, swift decisions right now because your feelings are bouncing all over the place. Also, you need to use appropriate coping strategies. Now, there are two main kinds of coping strategies people use against stress. One is where they modulate their feelings. They focus on what we call emotion-focused coping. And the other is problem-focused coping. Guess what? We can't solve problems. We can't use problem-focused coping right now. There's nothing we could do. Honestly, I tried that in the first 2 weeks. I thought, you know, I called various creditors and called tenants and tried to figure out work things and to try to stave off that fear of economic ruin that we all carry, whether it is logical and realistic or not. We carry two big fears, right? Fear for our health and fear for our economics, our financial worries. And so I tried to use problem-focused coping strategies. It made me more stressed. Now I focus on my feelings and just try to modulate my negative feelings. And I'm going to, later in the show, talk more about that. And also, I'm trying to reframe these. This is the best thing we can do, is reframe everything in positive terms. That means cherish this time. And don't beat yourself up if you're not getting your to-do list done. It doesn't mean you have to be a creative wonder, but cherish this time. There is good in this. When we come back, I want to talk more about our mental health. Who knew that our federal government would be finally talking about mental health and putting some money towards it, and some things that we can do to help ourselves feel better. Stay with me. I am with you for the next 2 hours. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more.
KFI AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you, and I am here from 4 to 6 every Sunday afternoon. We also, at our KFI family, have begun doing live streams. I was the first one to dive in streaming live from my dining room last Wednesday. I'm going to consistently do a Wednesdays with Dr. Wendy every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. I know people listen on the app all over, so you can figure that out. And I use a streaming service called StreamYard that streamed across four or five different platforms, like two different Facebook pages and Instagram and Twitter and YouTube. And so cumulatively, I am just proud and honored to say that 3,000 people tuned in last Wednesday, and it was great to see you all. Okay, I'm going to wear my glasses next time. I will put my pride away so I can read your comments more carefully and answer your questions. In the meantime, if you do have a question that you would like me to answer on Wednesdays with Dr. Wendy when I live stream, you can simply post it anywhere on my social media. Like you, I've got a lot of time on my hands these days, so I'm actually reading the comments. I have time. So, and my social media everywhere is at Dr. Wendy Walsh. That's at Dr. Wendy Walsh. As usual, on the commercial breaks during this show, I check my Instagram. And if you follow me and I like what I see and I like your Instagram and it looks like a fun one to follow, then I'll follow you back and I'll give you a shout out on air. All right. Our mental health. I was thrilled when I started hearing politicians talking about mental health as seriously as they were talking about physical health. You know, since the Affordable Care Act came in 2014, it was the first time that mental health services were at least financially regarded in the same way as physical ills. But now it is, we realize the need is super, super huge, right? But who knew that mental health would really be the top thing on a political agenda? There's something called the Disaster Distress Helpline, and it's at the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. That's part of the Department of Health and Human Services. And they are reporting that they have been getting 9 times the amount of calls in the past several weeks. Daily now, mental health used to be touched on once in a while by politicians. Now daily, it is talked about in televised briefings. Here's a direct quote from President Trump. He said, "You're going to have massive depression. You're going to have depression in the economy. Also, expect massive drug use, massive depression, mental depression, massive numbers of suicide." He loves the word massive. I will say that. That's not my word. It's his. It's a direct quote. And 2 days earlier, he signed a $2 trillion emergency relief package known as the CARES Act. This is good news. We hope it keeps up because originally they were going to cut back on mental health services for 2021. So we hope it keeps up. In the meantime, what can we do? What can we do at home when we're feeling feelings of lethargy, memory loss, focus problems, disorganizations, feeling like everything is overwhelming? If we're having sleep disruptions, changes in our eating patterns, feelings of sadness or anxiety, I know you've heard the regular stuff, right? Exercise, do mindful meditation. Yeah. But there's some other stuff that I think is really important that you need to know about. Did you know that light therapy, exposing your eyes to bright light, if you've been in these overcast skies, as we all have in Southern California in the last week, you've probably noticed your symptoms increasing. If you are stuck inside, literally, if you're over a certain age and it's really, or you have a pre-existing condition and it's unsafe for you to be outside, honestly, spending, now that the sun is coming out tomorrow, Layla tells us, hopefully, sit near a window, literally. Let bright light come into your brain because it can make the neurotransmitters absolutely explode. And journal. When you journal, you are separating your feelings from your brain a little bit. You're filtering them through your prefrontal cortex. Then you're stepping back and you're rereading. The important part of journaling is to reread what you've written quite regularly. And it creates a kind of gap, gives you a little space. If you haven't been calling your friends and not just sending texts and emails and posting on social media, hearing a voice or looking at their face on FaceTime, please do that every day. I started making a rule that I would call 2 people every day, people I haven't even talked to in years. And I've been catching up with everybody. And for me, being an extrovert, I have to tell you, it's been really, really helpful. Okay. When we come back, I want to talk about one particular thing that can help all of our mental health, and it's called rituals. No, it's not religious, and I'll tell you, my ritual just has to do with coffee. I'll explain when we come back. You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. Doctor, can't you see I'm burning? KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. So the person I have followed back is a rep for something called Intraceuticals. I'm talking about Instagram now. And I wanted to feature her and follow her back because it looks like I want to give a shout out to Intraceuticals. They're a skincare company from Australia, and they're giving free pamper package to healthcare professionals. So skincare for healthcare workers. You can follow her at OC Skin Therapist _ Intraceuticals. OC Skin Therapist. So I followed you back. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's at Dr. Wendy Walsh. If I like what I see, I'll give you a shout out on air. Thanks for the good work you're doing for healthcare professionals. And in fact, my soon-to-be niece, she's marrying my nephew in September if the wedding happens, is a nurse working in a respiratory ward. And she posted on Facebook today what her face looks like at the 8-hour mark of a 12-hour shift. She pulled off her mask, and you know, she has to wear both glasses and then the big, I don't know what you call it, the giant, you know, the clear plastic thing that comes down over front of the face, and then her tight mask. And it had caused such deep, deep wrinkles in her face. I mean, and she had dark circles under her eyes. And she was saying, this is why you need to stay at home. I can barely breathe in this thing. And I'm only 8 hours into a 12-hour shift. And I'm doing it every day. And this is not what we signed up for when we went to nursing school. They didn't plan to be in the trenches of this war. And you know how much we love them. Does your neighborhood, by the way, do the pots and pan banging? Brooke, are you with me? Is producer Brooke with me? I don't know.
Hello.
She's on mic. Hi, she's there. Do you, in your, what neighborhood do you live in again?
I live in Pasadena. And just to go into what you're talking about, the other day I was home, I was, I think, doing some, you know, leg lifts or something. And all of a sudden I heard sirens all over the place. I must have heard like, I mean, it sounded like Armageddon. And later on, I was watching the news, and it turns out, because I live right across the street from Huntington Hospital, literally right across the street. And it turns out about 10 or 12 fire trucks had parked themselves out front, and it was a huge, massive community
tribute.
Thank you to the workers inside.
It's wonderful. Well, it's supposed to happen everywhere at 8 p.m. So tonight, step out on your balcony or outside your door at 8 p.m. We take our own pots and pans and go and bang them. But people have taken it to a new level. There are fireworks. There are horns going. People get on the horns on their cars if they are on the road. It's amazing. So if you haven't been part of it, it only lasts for 2 minutes, literally from 8
p.m.
Yeah, from 8 p.m. till 8:02. But go out and make some noise to thank healthcare workers everywhere. It's so, so important. So what this really is a silly kind of ritual, right? Going out at 8 o'clock, really, what function does it have? But does it feel like we're part of it? It does. It makes us do something. And I wanted to talk about rituals, and I did a little research on rituals. In fact, you know, obviously many, many rituals came with religious roots, and there are rituals around weddings. There are rituals around funerals. But even in our ancient people, in our hunter-gatherer past, if they were heading out to turbulent waters with lots of sharks to fish, there were certain kinds of rituals they would do, dances they would do, songs they would sing. They've even put people in labs and put them through stressful situations where they were surely left with feelings of regret and loss. And then they asked one group to simply write down their feelings. And then they had the other group to write down their feelings and then sprinkle some salt on the paper, then fold it up very tight, then hold it in their hands, turn around 3 times, then rip it into tiny pieces and put it in the trash. And then 30 minutes later, they gave each of them a, you know, an instrument, a test, a quiz, and asked them, you know, about their feelings. And it turns out those that went through these weird rituals had better recovery from their negative feelings. So, and the other research on rituals shows that rituals need to have 3 things. They need to be kind of redundant. Like they don't really do anything. They just, it's something you do. They need to be repetitive. You got to do it at the same time every day. We know athletes are big with that, right? Right before a game. I remember a hockey player years ago telling me he had to get to the hockey arena at a certain time. He had to get the right parking place. He had to, a certain breakfast he had to eat, a certain thing. You know, it was crazy. I mean, this, we call it superstition, but it is rituals that give people confidence, right? I think that Michael Jordan used to wear his North Carolina shorts underneath his Chicago Bulls shorts at every game.
Curtis Martin of the New York Jets reads Psalm 91 before every game. Wade Boggs, former third baseman for the Boston Red Sox, woke up at the same time, ate the same chicken meal before every game, took exactly 117 ground balls in practice. Okay, so this is what rituals are. They tend to be redundant, useless. They tend to be repetitive, and they tend to be rigid. You have to do it that way. Now, I want to stop and remind everybody that if somebody suffers from obsessive compulsive disorder, this is when they take these rituals to another level. The repetitiveness and the rigidity doesn't stop, but it also does not alleviate the anxiety. So you might think because somebody with OCD does those rituals that it doesn't work for them. That is not true for the rest of us. Now, what kind of rituals could we be coming up with during coronavirus quarantine? Well, it might be schedule and structure. And I realize that I have my own. I actually put a video of this on my Facebook page that I've been playing around with iMovie, folks. I'm really terrible at it. And if you're an actual video editor and you would like to give me, just out of the goodness of your heart, a Zoom meeting where you'd give me a little bit of tutoring in iMovie, I would be so grateful. I'm having trouble with the transitions. I don't know how to make the fades long. Anyway, check out the one on my Facebook page now. I'm getting better with the graphics. I even put a little commercial for Mating Matters podcast at the end. But anyway, so I did this video where I laid in some B-roll of my morning ritual, which is I noticed it's a coffee thing. So when I get up in the morning, I am the earliest to bed in my house because I have teens and young adults. And their job, the last thing to do, is to start the dishwasher. I walk into the kitchen and there are now new things to put in the dishwasher because they've been up all night eating ice cream and bowls of cereal and whatever teenagers do. And so the coffee has been set. It's there. It's ready to go. But I never let myself enjoy that delicious sip of my first coffee of the day until I completely unload the dishwasher, until I reload the dishwasher. And then I go through this ritual where I wipe down all the counters and dry them in my kitchen. And then I exhale and pour my cup of coffee and give me that reward. That's my ritual. I, of course, never had the time to do that before quarantine. I was rushing out the door like anybody else. Half the time the coffee was in my hand and the dirty dishes stayed there until I got home. But now I have this, like I have to set my house in order to give myself the reward of the coffee and then think about my day. So think about what kinds of rituals you can be putting into your lives. For some people, it might be taking up the rosary or meditating and chanting. It might be a certain way of, you know, making your bed. Don't laugh. I spent an entire day the other day ironing sheets. I kid you not. For I have a to-do list a mile long. There are many things I should be doing, and I'm not allowing myself to beat myself up anymore because for whatever reason, I am meant to be domestic right now. And so I am just letting it flow. I have been cooking gourmet meals every night. I start the dinner in the morning because some things take a long time. I have been folding and cleaning and tidying, and I'm sure many of you have as well. But literally, I ironed French linen sheets, you know, linen, right? And spray starch, the whole business. It took me like hours. And then I made my bed. I was so excited to get into it. I will say that. So think about your life. Think about what kind of rituals you can be doing to relieve some of your anxiety. It's got to be redundant, somewhat useless. It's got to be repetitive, and it's got to be rigid. You do it in a certain manner and a certain order of events. Okay. When we come back, let us talk about dating in Corona time. Oh my goodness, there's some research coming out about those apps. And have you been contacted by one of your exes? You're not alone. I'll explain the science on that when we come back. You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640.
Oh, help me, please, doctor. I'm damaged. There's a pain where there was a heart.
KFI AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. Okay, the person I follow back on Instagram this break is Jean Blalock, B-L-A-L-O-C-K, a gorgeous Instagram. He's a film director, so the pictures are beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. So follow him back. If you'd like to follow me, it's at Dr. Wendy Walsh. All right, so have you gotten any texts from your ex during Corona time? Well, I did. And I'm sure many of you have too. don't get your hopes up, folks. I'll tell you what this is about. You see, what happens when we're feeling stress is our brain wants to scramble back to better times. And of course, we always look at the past through rose-colored glasses. We don't remember all the bad times. We remember the good times. I've had an ex from the 1980s sending me pictures of he and I from the 80s, right?
Not from the 80s. So, oh, no.
From the 80s, right? And my they didn't have flat irons then. I my hair was so frizzy and so huge. Oh, my God. Anyway, so what we're really trying to do is connect with people that we had value with, that we have a connection with at some point in our life, and also to help, to let that person be an object to help us bring up those feelings as we look back, the good, positive feelings that we're all needing right now to feel better. Now, on the other hand, don't think this is, unless it's a recent ex and you're on the fence and it's that back and forth, get back together again, whatever. But if it's somebody from far back, that's all it is. Don't let your brain get into would have, should have, could have. Maybe I should do a mate swatch now, a swap now. See, I had a little champagne with my Easter brunch here. So there you go. So I would say don't read too much into it, but know that it can be very consoling. And also, just because somebody is your ex doesn't mean that they don't hold a piece of your mind and your memories and your heart for the rest of your lives. And unless it was completely toxic and you're going to be walking right back into a terrible fire again, there's nothing wrong with keeping in touch with somebody you once cared about. What is a relationship? A relationship is an exchange of care. And our needs for care change across the lifespan. Our definition of care changes. Even sometimes care is financial care or sexual care or domestic responsibilities care or child care or instrumental care when someone's sick or emotional care. And our needs may change across the lifespan. Obviously, the time where we need a primary relationship more than any other time, there's two times in our life. One is when we're raising small children during those vulnerable years of pregnancy, nursing, and raising kids. And the other is as we get older and our bodies start to fail us. Mark my words, no matter what age you are, I promise you, you will go to the most weddings in your life when you are in your 20s and when you are in your 50s. It's the funniest thing, but I've noticed that anecdotally. All right, let's talk about online dating. The online dating app Bumble has reported a 21% increase in the United States since the coronavirus has plagued us. In San Francisco, it's up by 26%, 23% in New York City. Now, what the app is saying is do not go on dates. Keep yourself safe. So I think they even have a button in there where you can do like instant FaceTime and right through the app, and you can do virtual dates. And yes, people have been getting dressed up, sitting at dinner tables, lighting candles, opening a bottle of wine, staring at their phone and the person on the other end. Tinder has seen an increase of about 10 to 15% when the quarantine hit. In Italy and Spain, they saw a 25% increase in people using Tinder. Now, here's an interesting thing. You know, the whole idea of a post-disaster baby boom has pretty much been debunked. There was no baby boom after 9/11. There are no baby boom after big hurricanes, et cetera, even though they think that when people hunker down during a blackout or whatever, then they have to have sex in order to feel better. And we do know that sex does make people feel better. But the research shows that people aren't so attracted to their spouse during this time. They're mostly attracted to strangers during this time. Like if you think of it in evolutionary terms, I think maybe it was about, okay, we're all going to die. I want to spread my seed and I want to spread it as far as I can. I don't want to just keep it in one place at once. But the other reason people are reaching out, of course, is any kind of connection with another human being helps buffer our feelings of loneliness. And there are many, many single people, some in homes with children, who have to be the caregivers all day long to children. And at night, they, you know, go into their room, close the door while the kids are watching movies, and they go on the app so they can chat with each other. So I guess the real question is, will these lead to real-world relationships after the quarantine? And I think it depends on the quality of connection. I think if you're talking about the usual stuff, like what are your favorite colors and movies and what sport team do you like and where are we going to go together and travel, you know? Okay, that's fine. But what if you're talking about real stuff, life's greatest fears, coping strategies, your loves and love lost, deep feelings? If you really get to know someone in an emotionally intimate way, then I think there's a chance it can move into the real world. Now, I also want to remind you, research is coming out to show that we are seeing more romance scams. And if you're listening and you're a woman over the age of 50, you are the demographic who is particularly vulnerable to romance scams. And the top states showing romance scams are California, Florida, and Texas. So a romance scam, of course, is somebody who may be catfishing. They may not even be that person they're pretending to be. But more than anything, they don't want to have a relationship with you. They just want you to fall in love with them so that you will eventually trust them and send them money. So here's a few signs to tell if you are being romance scammed. Number one is they want to move fast in a relationship, all right? They want to gain your trust. They want to tell you you're like the dream person they've always wanted, and they want to move really, really quickly. Now, obviously, they can't see you in the real world, but they want to get on FaceTime. They want to be contacting you many times a day very quickly because they're trying to rope in your heart. Now, they also, if they are a catfisher, meaning they're fake, they do not want a video chat. So that's also a sign. If they won't get on FaceTime with you, if you can't actually see where they are, because they actually could be operating from a large syndicate in a country. In fact, there are plenty of them in African countries who are working like crazy to get you to transfer money from your banks. And they use guilt to get you to give them money. The story used to be like, oh, well, I'm a military person and I'm on a base far away. That's why my email's far away or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And my mother is really sick and I need money. But now they have a new excuse. It's coronavirus, right? It's that, oh, I have friends and family. They're all dying. I need money so that they can get a respirator, right? Another big hint is if they have poor grammar. You know how to read those emails well. Don't forgive them if they can't speak English. They're not sitting here in LA pretending that they're down the street in Echo Park. Okay, just saying. All right, so protect yourself while you are online. Enjoy yourself while you're in online, and hopefully it will lead to a real world relationship. When we come back, there are so many myths about the coronavirus out there. Can I go and dispel some myths for you? You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. I am here every Sunday from 4 to 6, and I'll be live streaming everywhere online at Dr. Wendy Walsh every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Okay, can we talk about the myths circulating around about coronavirus? I read so much about this, and so many even smart people are telling me things like, don't take ibuprofen, and if you can hold your breath for 10 seconds, then you don't have it, and blah, blah.
Everybody's so an expert, right?
Everybody's an expert, Layla. It's crazy right now.
My mom is one of those people, Dr. Wendy. Talk to
she
her.
She believes them all?
No, not only does she believe them, she shares them. And then I said, what's your source? Because here I am. I'm like, I'm a journalist. You got to cite a source. She's just posting stuff. Gargle for 10 minutes and you're cured or something. I don't know what she's talking
about. This is a mom's job, okay? She's doing her job. There you go. So let me go through some of the myths that have been circulating around this week. And the first one actually began with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo when he said, oh, you know, the coronavirus is the equal opportunity killer. I'm paraphrasing him, that it knows no social class and everybody is vulnerable to it. Well, now we know that African Americans and Latinos are dying at a much higher rate for the simplest reason that they are the frontline workers. They are working in grocery stores. They are working as delivery people. They are working in construction. They are working in hospitals. They are at the forefront of fighting the virus. And so I'm sorry, if you are wealthier, if you are living in a neighborhood where you can really, really isolate, if you can afford to have everything delivered, then you are more protected than other people. So we do need to address the socioeconomic and racial inequities in how this virus comes around. There's nothing genetic, okay? It's not like a Black person is more prone to getting sick, but it is the social piece that means that it is not fair in how it attacks people. Okay, the work on the rumors about face masks, the claim that face masks don't really work. Well, we know it's not ironclad, guarantee that you won't get sick, because viruses can also transmit through your eyes. Those little aerosols can also penetrate masks. However, masks are really effective at capturing droplets, which is one of the main routes of transmission of the coronavirus. That's if somebody coughs, if somebody sneezes. And we do know that some of these droplets have been known to float in the air for one study showed up to 3 hours. Now, they lose their virility after about 30 minutes, but you know, you could be walking through a grocery store and somebody coughed just ahead of you. I also want to remind everybody that there are people walking among us. We could be one, I could be one, who carry the virus, who will never, ever get sick. They walk around just distributing it. So don't just wear a mask if you think you're feeling sick. Everyone should wear a mask and stay 6 feet away from each other. How about this famous one? Oh, it's not more dangerous than just the winter flu. Okay, well, let me just break it down now. The COVID-19 is 10 times more deadly than a seasonal flu. It has about a 1% fatality rate. Think about it this way. If your office had a little bit of a fun lottery and 100 people went in on it, would you buy a ticket? There's only 100 people and everybody put in $10 and you could win? Of course you would. 1 in 100 chance of winning? Of course. You have 1 in 100 chance of dying too. 10 times more deadly than the seasonal flu. And keep this in mind, the seasonal flu kills somewhere between 290,000 and 650,000 people every year. Times that by 10. That's 6.5 million people could die from this. Okay, how about the myth that it only kills the elderly, so younger people should just relax? Not true. We are seeing that it is the strangest virus that is killing children, teenagers, young adults. Yes, people who are elderly are much more vulnerable, but that doesn't mean that it's not killing others. Here's a myth. You need to be with an infected person for at least 10 minutes. Okay, we hear a lot about viral load, right? So obviously there's a difference between passing someone quickly in a grocery store aisle and sitting beside them on a plane for a 3-hour flight and talking to them, right? So it doesn't matter how much time you're with somebody, you could get from even air that they've walked in 20 minutes before you, you could get exposed. The question is how big the viral load is. How long has it been on that surface? How long has it been in the air? How long are you talking face-to-face to somebody? Here's another myth. The vaccine will be ready in a few months. Oh, don't we wish it were true? You know, there's an amazing series on Netflix called Pandemic. It's not scary. It was done in 2018 and 2019, and they followed epidemiologists and virus tracers, like storm chasers. They go around the world and they test migrating birds and they try to figure out what needs to go in each flu shot every season because they're figuring out what viruses. And in this particular movie, they were chasing COVID-15, COVID-16. You know, the number applies to the year, right? COVID-19 started in 2019. And always on the chase for the new vaccine. You know what? If we have a vaccine commercially available after all the testing and experiments that have to be done on animals first, if we have a vaccine available within 1 year, that would be considered quick. Okay, that would be considered quick. So don't count on a virus. I do want to just pause to say that my prediction for what's going to happen with us and the isolation is that when the testing for the antibody becomes more widespread and more available to people, we will be able to determine who is immune and send them back to work. And we will also start letting people out, the lower risk people, people who aren't over the age of 55, people who don't have a compromised immune system for whatever reason. And we will send them out as great social experiments to kind of see who gets sick, right? And that will be the way. I mean, eventually the virus will die when it runs out of hosts. And how do we create hosts that it can't cling to? Well, they're either people who have survived the virus, people who have gotten the vaccine. So the first people that will be let out will be the ones who are maybe less likely to have a lower mortality rate. And then we're going to see what happens. I mean, at that point, we will have respirators available and maybe some more drug therapies, et cetera. All right. Okay. So here's some old wives' tale that I'm sure Layla's mother has called her about. How about this? Drinking hot water with lemon will kill the virus in your throat so it never goes down to your lungs. Drink it every 15. By the way, there's no hurt. Did you know that water with lemon in it is just alkaline water? If you've been spending a lot of money for alkaline water at one of those places, all you have to do is stick a lemon in your water and you've got it. So, hey, it's smart to be well hydrated. It's not a bad idea to have lemon, but it's not going to stop the virus from moving around your body. Okay, the ibuprofen one. I talked to a friend of mine, Dr. Eva Ritvo, who's a psychiatrist in Miami, who called her best contacts at Yale Medical School, and she assures me ibuprofen is okay. Whatever it takes to get your fever down, and as we know, many pediatricians suggest you alternate Tylenol with ibuprofen, Advil, every four hours to keep that flu down. How about this myth? I'm sure your mom's called you about this one, Layla. Soon as the sun comes out and the weather gets warm, it's just going to kill the virus, right?
Okay, she didn't say that one, but I've heard that from, again, random people delivering facts.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me remind everybody that when they had the huge outbreak in Australia, it was their summer, okay? They're heading into their fall and winter right now. So it started in hot weather. And then silly things like garlic and herbs. No, that's for vampires, folks. Don't you know that? It works every time on vampires. And also spraying alcohol and bleach on your body. I think that might be more dangerous than coronavirus. Keep the chemicals off your body and out of your lungs as much as possible. We know what we're supposed to do. It's very, very simple. Stay inside. When you do go outside, wear gloves and a mask. And when you come in, immediately remove your shoes, remove your gloves, remove your mask, and wash your hands very, very well. Also, wash any item that comes into your house, including your groceries. Time-consuming, but do it, and you probably won't get sick. All right, when we come back, are you tearing your hair out because you've suddenly become a homeschool parent? I am. Well, I've got some tips from the American Pediatric Association on how to keep us all sane and healthy during quarantine while we're educating our kids. You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. KFI AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. Are you home with kids? Did you go to teacher's college? Are you trying to educate them in their pajamas? Oh my goodness, I know how hard it is. Now, I have a teenager who doesn't like to do schoolwork at the best of times, has attention deficit, so staring at a computer screen for Zoom classes, even remembering to go to Zoom classes is crazy. Now, luckily, she's been on spring break this week. I didn't much notice the difference between spring break and school time, by the way. I know, I'm joking. She did have some school classes and has been doing some work. But it can be frustrating for parents and for students, and especially if you have small children in the small grades. I have a friend who teaches second grade. Can you imagine teaching math and reading on a Zoom class? I'm teaching college age students, and I'm getting a bunch of emails from them because they're confused about what's happening and the assignments, etc. And they have somewhat developed prefrontal cortexes. So the American Academy of Pediatrics has offered a few tips and tricks to help parents keep their kids healthy, to help education go better than maybe it has been so far. I personally think that they should just pass every kid, give them an emergency pass-fail by doing the barest minimum, which is showing up to the Zoom meetings and submitting, you know, some minimal thing. But the idea of actually learning, and I also don't think the kids should suffer by being held back a grade. Like, there's got to be a way that we can catch them up next year. And especially for those college seniors who are trying to graduate, like my heart, my daughter is one of them. And actually, she goes to Harvard, and Harvard decided that they would issue an emergency pass-fail grade, meaning that there's no grade that will go into the grade point average. It's not going to bring it up or down. They have to just basically show up and get through, and they will just get a pass or a fail. I like that. Myself as an instructor, I would like that too. If any of my students are listening, certainly my developmental students, you know, developmental psychology students, you know that you have a big paper due on Monday. And, you know, I know how hard you've been working. And it's difficult when you're feeling this amount of stress. I know it is. I'm having trouble getting through my to-do list. So it's just as hard. Okay. So here's what the American Academy of Pediatrics suggests for parents. Make a plan and talk to your kids about what the daily structure should be. It's not too late to start a structure and take their input. Kids know what's right for them and trust them to have some input. Do communicate with teachers regularly online, sending them emails, finding out what you can be doing to support your kids. I don't think they expect you to be a full homeschool teacher, but they're, you know, at least get a sense of what's vital. Look connected, okay, as a family. Look like you're doing your best. And also for preschoolers, remember that they're not getting all the social learning that they're supposed to be doing. So a good option might just be PBS Kids, right? If they're staring at screens, at least give them quality screens, a little Sesame Street, right? Use media for social good. Get your kids to check in by text with neighbors, friends, and loved ones. There are lots of ways for them to, in some way, keep up the social learning that they normally, I mean, that's a big part, especially if they're young. So definitely keep up the social connection because your kids are feeling as isolated as you are. Listen, I went through a walk with my friend Ilsa. I'm not going to tell you where, but I know a certain place that's a big commercial park with all the companies closed. And I know that when the developers designed it, they made green space in between the buildings, you know, for smokers to go out and sit down. So I was like, meet me over there. We'll stay 10 feet apart. We'll be in masks. And honestly, I had like tears in the corner of my eyes just being near a dear friend that I haven't seen in probably 2 months. And so I know if this isolation feels hard on us, imagine small kids. If you do use media with your kids, use it together. Use it for teaching moments. Watch the same things they're watching so you can get a handle on what's going into their little brain. And also, create a safe space for your family, all members, to talk about their feelings and their worries. Whether it's the dinner table, and of course, you have no tech at your dinner table, right? That's a rule. But ask the questions. How are you holding up? How are you feeling? And then help reframe it for them that they will go down in history telling their grandchildren about what life was like during the great quarantine of 2020. We are all making history together, and the more they can make notes about it, the better. All right, when we come back, I don't know about you, but I have been eating more than I've ever eaten in my life. I don't feel good about, I mean, I'm not worried about weight gain. I'm worried about my, you know, heart health, etc. But are we doing stress eating? Let's talk about stress eating and some coping strategies, because we really got to get a handle on this, folks. The eating. And also ways that we can all be giving back virtually. There are things that we can be doing that doesn't cost money, that we can be in this war together. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. KFI AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. Okay, so my Instagram follow back on this commercial break was a guy named Damani K. Gray. That's D-A-M-A-N-I, letter K, Gray, G-R-E-Y. He's a brilliant photographer. He only has 270 followers. We need to give him a lot more followers because they are beautiful pictures, especially with the sky so blue and the air in Los Angeles. Anybody notice the air in Los Angeles the last few days? Between it being cleaned by the rain and the lack of cars on the road, it is spectacular. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's at Dr. Wendy Walsh. And if I like what I see, I'll follow back and give you a shout out. Okay, so food. You know, here is this time of great stress. And if when people compare the coronavirus quarantine to, say, like World War II. Of course, the big difference was that in World War II, there was so much scarcity, right? And now we have so much abundance. And we do know that the farmers are still producing food and the food is getting to our grocery stores. We're very grateful for all the workers who are making that happen. But we're eating more than we've ever eaten. And I think a lot of it is stress eating. Producer Brooke, are you there? Did you have you been eating more than usual or at weird hours?
Well, my schedule is all over the place right now. That's my biggest thing. But today before the show, getting ready for it, I did make up a batch of my mother's fantastic banana bread.
Nice. And how long will that loaf last? Till midnight?
There are four of us here. There's two loaves, so it might be last until tomorrow afternoon or so.
Yeah, and I've been in. Eric, are you there? Eric, have you been eating at strange times and too much? Have you been eating strange stuff and too much?
Yeah, it's bad.
Layla, how about you?
Okay, first let me say this. I've been working out in my apartment, so I'm still exercising. Not like going to the gym. I miss the gym so much. But I will say, my sister and I, we're quarantining together. We are eating things that we never usually allow in the house, like chips. Mm-hmm. And some ginger ale,
yes.
A lot of bread, things that we never have in the house. Why?
I bought those cheese fish for the first time in 25 years.
Cookies are my
You guys know I am low carb. I haven't had sugar in 4 years, and now I'm mainlining it again. Right. It's just like, it is crazy getting up and getting ice cream in the middle of the night.
I had that
Oh, my goodness. And I keep saying to myself, this isn't going to be forever. You know, my favorite line is, it doesn't matter what you eat between Christmas and New Year's. It only matters what you eat between New Year's and Christmas. So now I've just amended it.
How about the rest of us?
Say again?
It says the person you can't gain a pound. What about the rest of us?
I know, exactly. But I'm just saying, for this time, we're not all going to dive into deep diabetes from, you know, 1 month of something, if this is what it takes to calm us. But we should get a grip on it as this goes on and on, because it looks like it's not lightening up anytime soon. Now, in my house, I happen to love cooking. It's my favorite hobby. My stress reduction is working with knives and fire and to sit there chopping, and the more tedious, the better. The other night I made this whole French meal that included this asparagus and brie and puff pastry and a butter chive sauce as an appetizer, and then stuffed eggplants, and then this roasted turkey leg and a salad, and like, four courses for every meal, really? But it's the cooking, it's the ritual, back to rituals. It's the ritual of the preparation and setting the table and lighting the candles and putting on my jazz and arranging flowers. This is like my teddy bear. It calms me. I need to have it happening. So I want to talk a little bit about stress eating, because there are plenty of people, not just during quarantine time, but people in their regular lives who do suffer from stress eating, right? And I'll tell you how you can tell if it's hunger or if it's stress eating. If it's stress eating, it comes on all of a sudden, and it takes your whole body. It's like, I need to eat now. And it's almost like a crazy reflex, right? And the reason why we do it is we're trying to soothe negative emotions. You know, a lot of this stuff goes back to our pre-verbal time, you know, back when we were babies and toddlers and we were in distress, and people would shove a bottle in our mouth, hopefully a breast in our mouth, right? And so food, our little brain was told that food was a way to calm us down. So let me talk about how we can deal with our stress eating during this stressful time where we're all stress eating. First of all, if you're going to be like me and cook and cook and cook and cook and cook because you can't take it anymore and you just need to keep cooking, at least stress eat on healthy food. So one day this week, when I was in one of my anal retentive must be a perfect meal phase, I laid out a Mediterranean platter that had hummus, that had celery and carrots and some olives and some seed crackers, no bread. And I made it visually beautiful, and I took a picture of it even. And that satisfied my need to cook and do something highly detailed. So ask yourself, what can I be making that's at least healthy food? If I'm going to overeat, what can it be that's healthy? One of the great treatment for stress eating has always been to socialize. And we know, of course, that we can't socialize right now, certainly not in the ways that we have in the past. But I do suggest that if you feel that hunger coming on, that you pour yourself a cup of mint tea and call a friend. Yeah, it's just like a lifeline, right? Call a friend. Reach out and have someone's voice and take your mind off your hunger. I think that will help you, especially if you're feeling this loneliness and depression that so many of us are. I know that Layla is one of the lucky ones that has kept moving. My daughter as well does at least 3 classes on our roof deck every day.
Like 3?
Yeah, Barry's Boot Camp is doing them, and Beach Body is doing them, and Studio MDR is doing them. All these places that we've used to be going to, they're now doing classes online, many of them free, some for a small donation to the instructor. And she'll do 3 different ones a day, a morning, noon, and night one that's keeping her stress down. That ain't me. I mean, I got my long walk in. My friend Maria and I did a walk with her dog the other day, and I have, you know, the app on your phone that tells you how many steps. And we had walked nearly 6 miles the other day, just talking 10 feet from each other, wearing masks. I got to tell you, on those hills, I got to take my mask off. I can't breathe through that thing. I have such a good mask that I can't get enough breath in, and I start getting dizzy. So I always have to take it off. But I always put it on when I'm anywhere near people, of course. Practice self-care. If you find yourself eating out of boredom or eating because you're stressed or sad or lonely, then it's time you care for yourself. It's time that you pour yourself a nice hot bath, that you dip in if you have a bathtub, if not, take a hot shower. It's a time for you to give yourself a foot massage, right? Give yourself a pedicure, do your hair, do whatever. Take care of your body in another way than besides filling it with food. All right. When we come back, some good news you can use, ways that you can give back virtually that won't cost you money. You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640.
Help me, please, doctor, I'm damaged. There's a pain where there once was a heart.
KFI AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. We're in the home stretch of the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show. I cannot believe 2 hours went by like that. Well, we weren't interrupted by press conferences this week, and I feel like I'm sort of back in my rhythm, and you're with me, and I'm with you, and thank you for being here. It means a lot to me, because it gets lonely. Extroverts are suffering more. Introverts are having a field day right now. They are so happy. Not all of them, but many of them are, for sure. You know, I want to talk about ways that we can give back during this time. And there is a lot of psychology in it. You know, Freud said that there are a lot of negative ways that we use as defenses against psychological pain. We know about those ones, right? Regression, rationalization, and kicking the dog because you're mad at your boss and all that kind of stuff, redirecting stuff. But you know what? He used one that he said was really good for us, and that's sublimation. That's taking the pain you're feeling, looking for people experiencing the same kinds of pain or worse, and attending to their needs. And in the same manner, it kind of functions to self-console one. So it's really good for our health, our mental health, and our physical health to give back in some way. Now, we can't go out there, and I mean, some people are volunteering with especially these amazing organizations that are out there feeding people still. I know that Katarina's Club is doing it today, and St. Joseph's Center certainly is. And so you can physically volunteer with these organizations with a mask and glove, and being careful, of course, always social distancing. But there are things we could do from our own home, like check on all your neighbors. You know, the actual people who live next door to you that you never talk to because you're busy in a big urban environment? Well, if you don't have their phone number to text them or call them, leave a note on their door. If you live in the kind of neighborhood where I do, where people leave their windows open, stand outside and give them a call. There happens to be an elderly lady right across the street from me who I met only once, but I hear her. She has clearly a lung condition. And so I stood on the sidewalk, and I called to her, and I asked her for a phone number, and I check in with her if I'm going to the grocery store and just say, can I pick you up anything? And you should stay inside. So this is a time to find your neighbors. I think I told you last week we had a a balcony dinner party with my neighbors on beside me on one side. And they're one floor up and a balcony over, but they had their food and we had our food. And we talked and yelled across the balcony to each other. And some other neighbors came out that we hadn't met. So it was kind of nice. Oh, we maintained social distancing. We did, but we still had a little bit of contact. I want to say this about our food. With all this overeating that we're doing, please don't waste food. Every year, Americans throw away 72 billion pounds of food, okay? Completely goes to waste. Use up everything. This protects your grocery store workers because you need to go back to the grocery store less frequently, right? So use up everything. Find ways to use those leftovers. Use, use, use. Do not waste. I found a great app called Be My Eyes app. You can be a sighted person who gives eyes to a visually impaired person who needs to like have a label read or what's the expiration date on this milk or is this my red top or my blue one? You just go to Be My Eyes app and sign up. And it's just like kind of an Uber. You'll get a little push notification if someone ever needs you. I've been waiting. Okay, visually impaired people, please use the Be My Eyes app more because I want to help you out. I want to be your eyes. There's an organization I found in New York, and if anybody knows of an LA-based one, please send me a post on social media, called DOROT, D-O-R-O-T, and it connects people with elderly people to call them once a week, to keep in touch, to do errands for them, etc. We need something like that. I'm sure we do, but I need one. When I was growing up, we always had adopted grandmothers. My mother called them. We found them through our church or whatever. Donate to those in the front lines. Here's a great way. You can both support a restaurant in your neighborhood and support healthcare workers. Why not call an emergency room or a respiratory care floor? Ask them how many employees are going to be there at what shift. Ask if you can donate a whole dinner to them all. Call your local restaurant. Pick up the takeout. If you don't physically do it, there are delivery companies who can do it for you. But, you know, keep the restaurant in business and keep healthcare workers happier. If you're one of the lucky people who has recovered from COVID-19, and I know that slowly the tests are becoming available. A girlfriend of mine called me today. Hey, Cheryl, I'm glad you're feeling better. She thinks what she had was COVID-19. She's a veteran, a former Marine. So she called up the VA and was able to get an antibody test. And she said it takes a whole week to get results, so she won't know till Thursday. But if once you know, it helps you in a number of reasons. One is you're immune, hopefully for a long time. If we use the example of SARS and MERS, people who recovered carried immunity for anywhere from 1 to 10 years. So she can go out and run errands for people. Of course, she'll still wear a mask and gloves to be safe. Why not? You don't want another big viral load. Who knows? Because we don't know about this one. But it gives her a little more freedom. But the big thing she can do, and anyone else out there who has recovered from COVID-19, you can donate plasma. And by donating blood plasma, you can save the lives of 3 people. So they're giving your blood plasma to 3 different people who are in ICU and on respirators. If you are a leader, if you're working in an organization, if you're a boss, make sure that your employees are protected. I am forever grateful to the people at iHeartMedia because not only have they given us, many of us, studios in our home. I'm sitting here in my little loft office above my living room right now, but only the essential workers that are in there are being protected by deep cleanings regularly and lots of protective equipment. So I'm very, very grateful to my company, and hopefully you're going to do the same for your company. This brings my show to a close. It's so sad to say goodbye to you, but I'm really excited to tell you that every single Wednesday I'm going to do my live stream. It was so nerve-wracking the first time to just be like live on video talking to you. And there were 3,000 people on across 5 different platforms. So whether you follow me on Instagram, whether it's Facebook, whether it's YouTube, whether it's Twitter, the handle everywhere is at Dr. Wendy Walsh, at Dr. Wendy Walsh. And I'm going to do The Doctor Is In every Wednesday at 6 p.m. You can send me any questions or topic ideas on my social media between now and then. Otherwise, I'll see you back here live every Sunday on KFI AM 640 from 4 to 6. I'm Dr. Wendy Walsh. Thanks for being with me.